Okay, we'll continue. So then Bhagwan is talking more about this same idea about this Atma. Verse number 21. Veda vinashinam nityam. Ya enam ajamav, ya enam ajamavyayam. Katham sapurushav partha. Kam ghatayati hantikam. So Veda, once you have known this Atma, I have all these verses I've been telling you, right? Atma is undestroyed, never changed, never. So avinashinam. Now you know that it is indestructible, right? I just told you that. So yes, do you agree? Yes. Indestructible. It is nityam. It is eternal. Always was, always is, always will be. Ya enam. This Atma, this one that we have heard about, it is ajam, it is unborn, and it is avyayam. Avyayam means there are no modifications, no changes. No changes can happen in this Atma. So that Atma, because even you might say it is eternal, but maybe it's getting old, or maybe it's getting weaker, or maybe it's happier or unhappier. No, the Atma is the same. It is neither happy nor unhappy. It illumines both happiness and unhappy happiness. But those who meditate, I'm sure, can vouch for that, that when we become quiet, when the mind becomes quiet and we come in contact with the Lord within, then that silence of the mind, when the mind is still, then you experience the Lord's presence, the joy within. So once you know this Atma as indestructible, eternal, without changes, unborn, then what happens? So once I know that this Atma is permanent, then katham sa purusha partha. Partha is Arjuna, the daughter of Pritha. How can such an individual think that this Atma, this consciousness, kam ghatayati hantikam? Then whom is this Atma going to destroy? Yeah, whom is the Atma going to cause destruction? So here, there are two factors. One is Arjuna. Arjuna thinks, I'm going to kill. And then Krishna is telling him that you do your duty. So Krishna is prompting, right? He's prompting Arjuna to do his duty. So the Atma neither does anything nor prompts. Here, of course, he's talking about killing because it is in the war. But in our life, suppose you do something wrong. Suppose, you know, you hurt somebody or you do something wrong. You say, I didn't do it. The God within me prompted me. If God was not within me, he prompted me to do it. Or I didn't do it. The Lord did it. No, the Lord is not the doer. Like I've talked many times, like the gasoline in the car, does it tell you where to go? No, the gasoline gives you energy. Now, whether you come to the Gita class or whether you go to a temple or a church on a Sunday morning, the gasoline doesn't say go to the class or go to church or go to temple. And then another person says, Sunday morning, who's going to go to church? Let me go to a bar. You know, there's a football game going on. So he goes to the bar, has 4, 5, 6 beers, and by the afternoon he's so drunk and his team has lost and he's so angry because they lost by 2 points and he missed a field goal. And he's so mad and he's so drunk and he, in his anger, he's driving drunk and he runs over somebody and kills him. Now, did the gasoline tell him to go to the bar and drink and kill somebody? No, he said, if the gasoline had not been there in my car, I wouldn't have gone to the bar. I wouldn't have killed. So, Your Honor, when he goes before the judge, you have to blame the gasoline. If there was no gasoline in my car, I wouldn't have gone to the bar. I wouldn't have got drunk. I wouldn't have driven drunk. I wouldn't have killed. Judge says, what are you talking? The gasoline is not responsible for your drinking, for your killing. The gasoline only gave energy to your car. Now the choice was yours. You could have gone to the temple or the church, or you could have gone to a bar. So the Lord within neither does anything nor prompts us to do anything. The Lord says, I give you the energy. Now whether you with your body, mind, and intellect, with your abilities, you can do good and become a saint. You can become like Mahatma Gandhi or Raman Maharishi or Jesus or Buddha or Swami Chinmayananda. You can become a great saint, become a great prophet, or you can become a criminal. You can become a mass murderer, like the, you know, the one in Las Vegas, or the Saddam Hussein, or Hitler, or so many mass murderers we have seen. So the Lord is neither to be praised if he did a good job as Swami Chinmayananda, neither he gets the criticism if he, you know, killed 50 people, you know, in Las Vegas. No, the Lord says, I gave you the ability, I gave you the energy, I gave you the body, mind, and intellect, the life, and what you do is your choice. So Lord neither gets the praise nor gets the blame. It is the individual. Of course, there is a law of karma. So you can't escape the law of karma, even if that guy shot himself in Las Vegas. But if he killed 50 people and wounded so many, sooner or later, he has to bear the consequences. Some people say he'll go to hell and suffer forever. That's one belief. And we also believe that, yes, he will suffer in hell, but then he will be get another birth where he will have to pay for all his acts. So that it's not only heaven or hell, but he will have to compensate somehow the individuals whom he has hurt, so in a subsequent life. So the consciousness is neither killing nor prompting killing, or in another case, it's neither driving nor causing to be driven, but it's providing the energy to drive. It is the individual drives. Same thing while cooking. You know, if you suppose you are cooking and the dish comes out good, you don't say God will get the credit, or the dish gets burnt and is too much salt. And no, the Lord is gave you the energy. Your choice is yours. You make a dish tasty or you make it bad. Again, the Lord neither gets the credit nor gets the blame. So the Lord says, I neither do nor do I prompt. I just give you the energy. And there was a very famous saint in India, Raman Maharishi. Very recently passed away in the 1950s. And towards the end, you know, he was another saint who actually never traveled much. He stayed in one place for so many years. And he would just sit down and people, thousands of people would walk by. He gave very little talks. He hardly wrote a couple of 2-3 books. But his presence, it is said, was so beautiful, so much beautiful energy that people who walked by him and sat in front of him, all their questions were answered. And it was like they were in the presence of God. He didn't have to speak a word. He didn't have to do anything. And even if he talked, he spoke very little. Some days he didn't speak at all. Some days if somebody asked him a question, he'll say, who has the question? Say, I have the question. Who are you? I am this individual. No, who are you really? So he would take you to who you are really. And that was the extent of his teaching. So when it was time for him to drop his body, he was getting quite old and he said, my time has come. And his devotee said, Bhagwan, they used to call him Bhagwan, you know, God, because they used to revere him as God himself. Please don't leave us. He said, look, as long as this body is useful, I will keep it. But now has come a time when this body is no longer useful to all of you. As long as it was useful to you, I kept this body. Now that it is no longer useful to you, it has gotten old, I will put it aside. So that was his ability. He could see that this body is no longer useful to the world. And so at that point, it is time to drop it. So that's what the teacher tells us. That you and I are eternal. So the point is that death has to be, we'll talk about it next week, but death has to be understood differently. And we'll talk about it next week, what exactly is death. But death is not the end, because we are going to continue our journey and have multiple lives. But people say, I don't believe all that. What I believe, and there are some people who, when we ask them, you know, Swamiji comes, why don't you come to the classes? So one person told me, look, you know, I believe in living a good life. Good life means I'm honest, I'm sincere. He's a doctor. I take good care of my patients. I don't hurt. I don't cheat. I don't lie to the best of my ability. I don't feel I need to go to these classes. So that's very good. Nothing wrong with that. If he's honest, and I know he's a very good doctor, very sincere, very. So that is good. But if you ask such a person, where did you get this knowledge that I should be good? I should not harm others. I should not hurt others. I should help. So where did you get it? From my parents or from my teachers? Okay, how did they get it? They were very religious, so they read it in the books. So they read it in what books? Oh, some religious book they must have read. But ultimately, every religious book in India owes its origin to the Vedas, to the supreme knowledge, which was the ancient Vedas, from which the Bhagavad Gita also is an essence of the Upanishads. Sarva Upanishado Gavo Dogta Gopala Nandana. So all the Upanishads are cows, and Krishna was a cowherd, and just as a cowherd milks the cow and shares it with us, so he milked the essence of the Upanishads, gave it to Arjuna, who is like a calf, just as the cow gives milk for the calf. So Bhagavan Shri Krishna gave this knowledge to Arjuna, but all of us are enjoying it, even so many thousand years. They say Gita is about 5,000 or 6,000 years old. Even now, we are, all of us are sitting and enjoying this beautiful book, this beautiful scripture. So even though this person says, I should be good or bad, where did he get the knowledge? From the scriptures. If he might say, I don't want to go to classes, I don't need to learn. But he is practicing what is said in the scriptures. Just as Christ said, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. The 10 commandments of Moses, you know, thou shalt not cheat, thou shalt not lie, and all those things. So just as this knowledge, where did it come from? The knowledge that I should be good, the knowledge that I should be loving, the knowledge that I should be compassionate, the knowledge that I should be kind, came from the scriptures. So whether you admit it or not, you ultimately have to go to this knowledge, and you have to go to the source. Whatever you may call it, you may call it living good, you may call it helping others, you may call it being kind, you may call it not being hateful, you may call it being compassionate, but the source of everything is the scriptures. That's where everything came. These saints and these prophets, they had heard this knowledge in their meditation, the great rishis, and in their meditation, the Lord himself, the consciousness, spoke to them. That's why our scriptures are called Shruti. Shruti means heard. So these great rishis in their meditation, they heard it, and then this knowledge they then transferred to their students. And from teacher to student to teacher to student, it came down. And ultimately, our Puja Gurudev Swami Chinmayanandaji got this knowledge from his teacher, and he shared with us. And that's how this Chinmaya mission came into being. And now we have 300 centers throughout the world where such classes are going on. Here we have about 40 or 50 people, some places. Or we have 160 students in Balvihar. Some places have 2,000 students studying. You know, they have a full-fledged school, like from kindergarten to 12th grade in Houston, in San Jose, in LA, they have 1,200, 2,000 students. So this mission is all over the world. It's all the major countries of the world, in all the major cities, there are centers like these. Some are small, some are big, where this knowledge that was given to us by the rishis thousands of years ago, our Puja Gurudev, with his inspiration, these centers are running. Of course, he dropped his body in 1993, and then his student, Swami Tejomayanandaji, you know, continued the work, and now we have Swami Swarupanandaji. So that's one point, that we owe this knowledge to the rishis, to the scriptures. Secondly, you live a good life, that's good. There's nothing wrong with that. But there is something beyond this life that we have to reach, we have to know. Otherwise, you live a good life, wonderful. You do good, you're wonderful. So what happens after death? You go to heaven, you enjoy heaven, you have a great time. Heaven is like Hawaii. And then I come back, and then I start my journey again. And then again, I live a good life. Again, I go to heaven. Again, I come back. punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam, or somebody lives an evil life, same thing, he will go to hell and come back. When are you going to graduate? You know, it's like saying, I enjoy high school, so I'm going to keep repeating high school, one after the other, 11th grade, 12th grade, 11th grade, 12th. When are you going to go to college? Are you going to keep, no, I love my school, mom, I don't want to leave my high school. Are you a fool or what? No, you have to leave high school and go to college. You know, you need to go to, do your bachelor's, do your master's, do PhD, make something of yourself. How long are you going to? So similarly, if you and I think that just living a good life is enough, that's, you know, then you are still in high school. Living this life is actually only the beginning. We have to go beyond this human life, go beyond this BMI to the consciousness within. That is the ultimate goal of human birth. That's why they say the ultimate goal of human birth is God realization or self-realization, which both mean the same. Realizing God is realizing self, the consciousness within, because within me and within every one of you is God. So knowing that and experiencing, knowing me is right now, you, I am speaking, you are self and you are listening, I am that consciousness, but actually experiencing it. And that's what, by studying these books, by thinking about it, by going home and saying, Krishna tells me I am not this body, I am this Atma. How does it prove that? Why does he say it? So think about it yourself. Go home and contemplate upon it. Just because it has been said here does not mean it is true. It may appear true, but I have to. Right now it is Swami Chinmayananda's knowledge, and from him, whatever little I have heard, I have passed on to you. So it is Swamiji's knowledge and maybe a little bit of my knowledge, but it has to become your knowledge. I have to experience it. That's why we say in the, when you sit and contemplate upon it and think about it and say, yes, that is true. I was there in childhood. I was there in youth. And when I'm happy, I am there. When I'm unhappy, so in joys and sorrows, I am there. In heat and cold, I am there. In success and failure, I am there. So that's what Bhagavan Sri Krishna says, that if you know you are that consciousness, then you will be the same. Heat is there and cold is there. What is to complain? I am unaffected. If it's heat, the body is feeling heat. I am not feeling heat. I am not the body. If it's cold, the body is cold. So I wear some sweater, but I am unaffected. So there is nothing to complain, whether it's hot, whether it's cold, whether there is joy, whether there is sorrow. I go through it because I am neither the mind that is experiencing joy or sorrow. I am the consciousness. Whether there is success or failure, I am none of those. And I am eternal. This body may perish, but I never die. So that fact has to become firm in you. Then death will not affect. If it's time to drop my body, okay, like Raman Maharishi said, he said, now this body is no longer useful. I can drop it. So you and I have to be convinced that I am this eternal consciousness. And this body, even if it drops, so what? Yes, if I get sick, I go take care of the body. I do whatever I can. But tomorrow, if I have an illness, there is no cure. I have terminal cancer. Okay, it's time to drop, time to move on. And next week, we'll talk about what happens to the human being after death, what happens to the body. So this topic will continue some more. So that's what we are saying, that do not be stuck on living a good life. That's wonderful. I'm not saying that's good. Being a good individual, living a good life, being helpful to others is wonderful. But I have to grow beyond it. I have to not be stuck in that. And that can only happen by reading the scriptures, by understanding it. And I'm so thankful all of you come. That way I have a chance, you know, I start preparing from Friday night. So I get a chance to read on Friday, read on Saturday. And then Sunday morning I come and make notes. So I get to read it three times. You only listen to it once. So because of all of you, I get three times the benefit. So let us, each one of us, apply that in our life. This knowledge is not just in the book. It's not just in the Gita or the Bible, but it has to become part of my life. And that can only happen when you are convinced that I am the Atma, the self, the consciousness. I am not this body. In fact, my daughter and I, we used to joke, you know, I remember when she was in junior high, seventh grade, and, you know, in winter, sometimes the car is very cold. When you get in the morning, it's freezing till the car warms up. She said, Dad, it's very cold. And then I said, what does Gita say? She says, yeah, I am not this body. So we used to make a joke of that. And she used to always say, I am not this body. So I said, oh, that's very good. So in seventh and eighth grade, you know, she, because she must have heard it in Bal Vihar from one of her teachers. So that is the point, that if whether cold or heat or joy or sorrow or success and failure, I am not this body. I'm not the mind. I'm not the intellect. I am that supreme consciousness. So make that firm in your understanding. Pakka. It has to become a firm, clear under. Somebody wakes you up and says, who are you? Don't say I'm Satish or I'm Shana or I am the Brahman. I am the consciousness. That how clear it should become. It's not happened to me yet. If somebody wakes me up, I won't say that. But it's supposed to become. So we are all working on it. You and I, we are all on the same path. And so that is the essence of this verse. Anything related to spirituality or living in the world or whatever?
Some of these texts without actually understanding the knowledge.
Okay, yeah, that's a very good question. First of all, you should pay more attention to the English commentary. Do you read the English commentary?
Yes.
Right, yes. So chanting.
But even then you forget.
Yes, forget. Yeah, which is okay. See, nobody remembers one time listening or one time reading. Nobody, even I told you, after even so many years, when I still sit down in a class, I may listen to 100%, I may retain only 10 or 15 or 20%. So most of it goes out, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's okay. But repeated listening and repeated reading will help. So keep on listening and keep on reading and finish the whole chapter and whole Bhagavad Gita in 1 year and start again. Nothing wrong with that. And the same ideas will be repeated again and again. And Swami Chinmayananda's commentary is so clear. Sometimes the words he uses are a little difficult. The concepts are difficult. But by listening again and again, it will become clear. Or you can bring it here. If you have a particular question, put a little bookmark on it. And I'll be happy if I can to address that, number one. Number two, the chanting of the Sanskrit has its own power, has own benefit. Chanting of these mantras, not only the Bhagavad Gita, but any of the mantras, you know, like Vishnu Sahasranama or you know, any of these, you know, the mantras, Nirvan Shatkam, Mano Buddha Ahankar, Chittani Naham. So, or especially these Vedic mantras. The Vedic mantras, though, need to be chanted correctly. So if they are from the Upanishads, the Vedic mantras, you and I cannot chant unless we have been taught by a teacher. But the Bhagavad Gita is relatively easy. So just chanting the mantras and memorizing them has its own power. But what I do, like I have several chapters of the Gita memorized. I have the 11th memorized, the 12th, the 15th, three or four chapters completely, and others, most of the verses I know. Some of the chapters I know, some of the chapters I know. But what I try to do is, while I am memorizing, I read the meaning of each word. So while I'm memorizing, I'm also learning the meanings. That's why the green book you have, right? That has a word by word meaning. So when you know the meaning and you're memorizing it, then that verse has more power. So like, for example, the 11th chapter talks about the Lord's glory. That is the infinite Lord and the whole universe. And I remember when I was memorizing it, actually, that's one of the hardest things I have ever done in my life. Those 55 verses are so hard. 6 months, I had a headache every morning because I was trying to memorize. Ishwarananji Swamiji had told me I have to memorize that. And I used to say, why did I start that? But it's so beautiful because when I'm memorizing, I'm visualizing the Lord's form. There is this infinite Bhagwan, and in him, this whole universe is, and the sun and the moon and the stars, and this book, that particular verse chapter talks about that the sun is in me, the moon is in me, and then even the planets, even the gods and goddesses, even the demons, the ghosts. And so you can visualize. So knowing the meaning is even better. But even if you don't know the meaning, just chanting of the Bhagavad Gita is very good. Actually, if you want to learn chanting, we do have a chanting class. where the children who participate in the competition learn. And if you're welcome to sit for half an hour, just sit from right after the aarti ends at about 12:30, 12:35. We go to one of the rooms, and you can sit in Jayashree's class here in this room, or in my class, we meet in the last room, and just sit in the back and listen to the chanting. So that way you can know how we try our best to, you know, teach correct chanting, so you can hear how it is chanted. And if you have the book with you, we are doing the 17th chapter, you're welcome to sit. The children, of course, are preparing for a competition, because in May we have a Gita chanting competition. But adults are welcome to sit in the back, and that way you can see how the verses are chanted. But yes, knowing the meaning is good, but even chanting without the meaning, like the children, a lot of times they do not know the meaning. I try to tell them, but they memorize just like that. But even memorizing these scriptures, because it is from the Lord's mouth himself, has a lot of power, a lot of energy.
It's similar to what Swami Advaitananda last month was saying.
Yes.
When he was comparing Bhakti Yoga compared to Jnana Yoga and Karma Yoga.
Yes, yes. So bhakti is where I have love for God, and jnana is the knowledge, and karma is service. So all three paths run parallel. It's not that they are competing. Some people say, I don't like bhakti. You know, I'm a jnan yogi. I like to have the knowledge. Another one says, knowledge will not get you anywhere. You need to love God. Why are you going to study? We say they are wings, two wings of the same bird, knowledge and love for God. And together, when you use them, then your life will become service and you will reach.
So prior to 1990, how was your knowledge or understanding of the Sanskrit language?
No, I didn't know Sanskrit, but I used to go for Swami Chinmayananda's lectures when I was a teenager. My mother took me. At that time, I didn't remember much. But see, that samskara remains, because I have attended several of his Gyan Yagnas for almost 2, 3, 4 years. We were going, you know, to attend his lectures. We even went to Pawai Sandipani, where Swamiji used to live and where the students were being taught. So my mother was associated with Swamiji for a while, and so she used to take me. I also not only listened to Swami Chinmayananda, but heard Rajneesh, and then some of our Pranami faith that we belong to, some of their gurus. So my mother was very spiritually inclined. My father was very much into service, very honest, very hardworking. But my mother had written a lot of spiritual books. So the influence of both of them for me has been. So in the Sanskrit, I started studying only in the 90s. Actually, my father-in-law gave me the basic introduction, you know, the eight forms and all that. After that, I just studied on my own. That's through the Gita, by reading the Gita. Because I love languages. Because I also am fluent in Spanish, and then Hindi, Gujarati, Marathi, Punjabi, Sindhi, English. So 6, 7 languages I can understand. You know, I can understand Sindhi, Gujarati, Marathi, Hindi, Punjabi, English, and then some Spanish. So multiple languages. So I just picked up along the way. Yeah.
Just a small suggestion for him. So what he can do is, I'm a student from Sanskrit.
Yes.
So he can break the word.
Right.
If you can understand Hindi, then you know. So if it is, so break it and just write small in letters in Hindi. And if you understand English, then you just write in English. So it becomes easier for you to pronounce the next time, the next year when you come back. So
true.
It comes back with meaning, understanding,
yes,
and the correct pronunciation.
Yes, yes, break the word, the sandhis. Yeah.
Sandhi.
Yeah. So the other thing is, you can even buy a little primer. There are a lot of little primers of Sanskrit. The next time you go to India, pick one up. And if you are that interested, it's not that easy, but you can. But main thing is, study the Bhagavad Gita every day, and slowly this knowledge will become yours. Just even whether you understand, whether you remember or not, every day I have to read 2 verses. And once in a while, if you miss, it's okay. But it should be done daily. Okay, thank you. We'll end here. We'll see you next week. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah. Hari Om. Thank you. See you next week.